This is the Aston Martin Heritage Podcast with Gary Taylor.
Welcome to another episode of the Aston Martin Heritage Podcast, and thank you for choosing to listen. Please do look back at our previous episodes, as there is some good stuff there in case you missed them, and probably some ropey ones too, but you can just blast through those. If you have any ideas of podcasts or even want to appear yourself, please drop us an email to podcast@amht.org.uk and we will love to hear from you. So, on to this one. Here at the AMHT, we do love an anniversary as it allows us to focus the podcasts and our work on whatever has been celebrated. Other than the 110 years of Aston Martin a while back, we're now looking at another significant number, this time being 90 years, and this time, this belongs to the Aston Martin Owners Club. So here, to crack open the bubbly and blow some candles out, are Tom Wesley, chairman of the AMOC, Anthony Ode, chairman of events, and all the way from the USA, well, I say all the way because he's looking at me on Zoom right now, Bob Welch, representing the AMOC Americas. Gentlemen, thank you for finding time and being here. So I've done a little bit of research, but it's only very little. I can only think of one or two off my head of a similar age, and that's the MG Car Club and the Vintage Sports Car Club. So 90 years is quite an achievement for a club, isn't it, Tom? Shall we go to you?
Yeah, thank you. No, it is indeed. As far as I know, because I did check what the single mark car stats were as a car club, and I think the oldest one was the Jarrett Car Club, as some may remember, was built in Yorkshire years ago, in the 1920s. And then there was the Riley Owners Club, which I think still carries on. And then there's the MG Car Club, and then there's Aston Martin Owners Club, in order of their age. So we, in fact, of the ones that have survived, I think we're the second oldest single mark club.
And I believe primarily the only Aston Martin club as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it was remarkable, really. The story of the beginning goes that a chap called Mort Morris Goodall, was very enthusiastic that something should be done about these people who've got Aston Martins, which are very few, and tried to see what interest there might be. So I think he wrote to the Auto Car magazine, and about 20 or 30 people turned up to have a chat about it, and they met in 1935. To decide that, yes, they did want to set up a club, and five people put themselves forward to start it. The chaps involved were Mortimer Morris Goodall himself, a chap called Lance Prideaux Brune, Dick Anthony, Morris Faulkner, Harold Bevan, Miss Dorothy Bead, and a chap called John Cadbury of chocolate fame. They were all very enthusiastic, and in those days, really, it was about the social side of it and racing and rallying, because trials were still quite a big thing in the 1920s.
Yeah, yes, they were. I've noticed that the original purpose of the AMOC is promote the sport and pastime of motoring, develop interest in the Aston Martin car, and encourage social interaction between members. I think that still holds up today, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, I think one of the big things they did was have an annual dinner on Park Lane, which was a splendid affair. We still try and emulate that. Yeah.
Perfect.
Just one thing, Tom. Although there were five on the committee, as you say, I understand that racing driver Charles Jarrett was named as president, and Sammy Davis was vice president, and Leslie Keeville was the treasurer, and Mort became the honorary secretary.
That's exactly right. Yeah. What happened was the five that I mentioned decided they were going to do it, and then the auto car picked it up, and Sammy Davis was then, in the Auto Car magazine, they pulled it all together and they split the roles between. But you're quite right, the president and vice president were different people as well. Yeah.
We're recording this podcast just before your founder's dinner, lunch, I should say, on the 25th of May. That's going to be the 25th of May, so this will be published soon after. Where does the Grafton Hotel fit in this?
This is where they met. I mean,
it
was Tottenham Court Road, central London. Many of them lived in that part of the world, and that was the first plan. So it's exactly to the day what we've got planned. Anthony, I'll tell you all about it. We're having this dinner, and it's exactly the same place, exactly 90 years later. So there we go.
Quite right, Tom. It's now changed and moved on. It's now called the Radisson Blue Euston Square, but I'm sure to most people it's still known as the Grafton. As we did on the 80th year, actually, we're going to have a lunch there, champagne reception and a toast to the club. Should be a good social afternoon.
That's going to be marvellous, isn't it? And I say it's already happened, but you're walking and sitting in the presence of some great people in exactly the same room, same hotels, you know, same time, same date.
We've got some memorabilia there. So the hotel are quite keen that we do celebrate it. So anybody visiting there will be able to see a little bit of the relevance of what the memorabilia is there for.
Oh, perfect. So after the event, some of the memorabilia still be there?
Correct, yes.
All right. So if you're going to London, book yourself in there and have a look through some of the Aston Martin Owners Club and Aston Martin Archive. Fantastic. It kicked off. Let's go through some of the history of the Owners Club. So that started in 1935. That was only about four or five years before the war. So I guess not much was happening in those four or five years.
Yeah, I think during the war, they did sort of cease their normal operation. It was not until 1948, I think it was Richard Stelbras at the RAC Club. They had a meeting back at the RAC Club and kicked it all off again.
A name that seems to come up is Dudley Coram, and he took a leading role in the new club with someone called Eric Cutler as chairman. And I think he was within he's certainly known within the club history and throughout until he died in 1976. If we move on to another name, is Viscount Down. I believe he came president of the club. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, I think it was 1980.
I think so, yeah. Around the Diamond Jubilee time.
That's right. A very enthusiastic member. And in the 60s, he was very involved with the racing program, you know, seeing what interest in that. And then subsequently, he himself managed to help organize Le Mans entries very successfully to keep the show on the road, so to speak, when the company probably hadn't got the resources to do it on their own. So, yeah, it was very, very supportive and a very effective president. Yeah.
Can I just go back to the wartime? Because I think one thing that's worth mentioning is that Jock St. John Horsfall, which we have an annual race now, the St. John Horsfall meeting, was a racing driver, but also involved in intelligence. Part of the Operation Mincemeat. Where a corpse was sent with some false papers chained to be washed up on the beach, and which is subsequently was made into a film that's currently a West End production of Operation Mincemeat.
Yes.
So although you said things probably stopped from the club point of view, it was interesting that we had members who were still very active at that time.
No, that's absolutely right. That's very interesting. I'm glad you remembered that. That's Aston Martin car to whiz around delivering bits and pieces, yeah.
Bob, when did AMOC Americas, back in 1935, primarily a UK-based club, when did AMOC Americas, if that's the right term, when did that start?
I think it began initially with two important phases. One is Rex Woodgate came from the UK, from the factory, to King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, with the first Aston Martin dealership, Aston Martin Lagonda. He was very essential. Interestingly to know, after his passing, his sons Chris and Neil came, and we had a memorial service at Lime Rock during our annual meeting, keeping the tradition alive with his wife, widow, joining in from overseas. So Rex Woodgate was a key figure and very well-known, very charismatic figure with a big English, you know, handlebar mustache, big personality, very, very active. And then on the West Coast, we had, I think it was maybe Kerry Green, who's currently America's representative on the trust, is now in San Francisco. So that became the West Coast area. Cars are still in the family. So we sort of start with King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, and San Francisco in the late 50s, early 60s, and then moving on, the club really getting going in the 70s. So we've had at Lime Rock about to happen next week, is a beautiful racetrack in the Berkshire Mountains, west of Boston, north of New York City. And we have had 54 years of annual meetings there.
We
have a race day, a track day, not a race. We have a track day. We have a country drive with a nice luncheon. We have a concours, which draws at times up to 150 members from North America and internationally. We've been very lucky to have people coming over from the UK to visit us. Stephen Archer, Ian Barclay, Liz Ayers, Tim Cottingham, many others. So the club I think, is evolving in the Americas. It's gotten very large. As people may know, the Americas are now the largest market for Aston Martin Lagonda cars. So it's definitely grown from sort of a vintage car racing club community to a social enthusiast community. We have had some terrific events aside from Lime Rock. We have one in Ontario in September called the Great Lakes Gathering, which Alec Aspinen, the head of Canada East, organizes. That draws maybe 150 members to a beautiful place called Niagara-on-the-Lake. We have big events every year in the West Coast. There's a North-South meeting from California members. And then Pebble Beach Monterey Car Week always prominently features an AMOC event and collaboration with the Pebble Beach Concours and Aston Martin Lagonda. I think one of the differences maybe for the Americas is, I always say driving in England, I feel like something is either, it's 40 miles and 4 days away. But in North America, we had, for example, 8 members from Texas drove 2,300 miles from Texas to our Lime Rock meeting and then back.
Oh.
So the distances are immense. I would also say, in the best spirit of the international quality, global quality of the club, I always feel it's very important to remember that members are welcome everywhere. So I've gone to meetings not only in the Americas, but many in Sussex, many in London, many of the big AMOC events, and even my friends in Hong Kong have hosted me when I've been there. So I would encourage anyone to send an email along if you think you're going to be somewhere, find out if members are going to be available and hopefully get together.
Well, to me, you've sold me. What's going on in America? I think I'm going to be checking my next flight. I'm going to be whizzing over there. It sounds fantastic. I think what's come through on this is, and I remember somebody in the AMOC saying this, is that you join for the cars, but you stay for the people.
Yes.
And I think from the events in America and Tom and Anthony, the events in the UK, the cars are the excuse, but you stay for the people. You've got this great social arena and you get access to places that you probably wouldn't have outside the owner's club. Am I right there?
Correct. On a similar theme, apparently Maurice Goodall had a quotation, which was, "Members I haven't met are friends I haven't made yet." And apparently this was one of his mantras that he repeated up and down. So the same theme's been going on for the 90 years.
Yeah, I remember, I think Anthony too, we used to compete in different Concours decades ago. And that's really how we sort of got to know each other and got to be involved with the club to want to do something more than just pitch up and participate in that event. It's a really large bunch of people, aren't there? It's like a little family that gets together every year.
It is. And as Bob said, people visiting America, a year or two ago, I went to South Africa and reached out to the rep there, and he arranged a little gathering. There was 4 or 5 cars came. We had 2 or 3 hours little run out, and again, that was just by an email to, "I'm going to be in Cape Town."
I would also maybe to say a bit about, I think, what represents the best of the club. I'm just back on Thursday from a drive with the Area 00 section, the 00 section in central London. They're the ones who've done the drives from Mayfair to Marrakesh, London to Morocco.
Yes.
Bond Street to Bosphorus, London to Istanbul. I joined them on a drive. This is very typical. Great welcoming friends, Jason Carr, Steve Ward, and others. I asked if they had a spare seat on their trip to Gibraltar, showed up at Paddington Station, and we were off through France, Spain, Portugal, and Gibraltar. And we just finished the Mayfair to Miami trip, where 7 owners shipped their cars, including a beautiful DB4 Series 5 of Rory McGregor, from London to Halifax. And we drove from Halifax, Nova Scotia, to Key West, Florida, and then back to Miami for the Formula One Grand Prix. So this is the best. We had 30 members from New England join us here. We had all kinds of, as you mentioned, events where we were able to liaison with local dealers, car enthusiasts, members came out to meet us. Just a spectacular trip, again, that covered a huge amount of distance with people who I didn't know at all 5 years ago, and now I consider part of a very important community of friends.
That is beautiful. I think we've all seen Area 00 on their social posts, and it looked like an amazing event. I want to point out, it's called the Aston Martin Owners Club, and you've been phoned about members, but you don't necessarily have to own an Aston Martin. You can be a member and you can still participate.
Absolutely. It was ultimately for Aston Martin enthusiasts. And I know years ago, a lot of young, when the motor shows and that were on, a lot of young boys would join, you know, very happy for that to happen because it got the aspiration there and people's connectivity to be able to come and look at the cars. It was great. Yeah.
Well, we have some members who, as you say, are not necessarily owners, but they'll come along and help the marshalling and the judging at Concours, that type of thing. So everybody gets involved. Everybody's made welcome.
I remember when I joined all those years ago, when I was about 16 or 17 years old, clearly didn't own an Aston Martin at that age. I remember seeing in AM News a few years later, there was a request, and I can't remember the gentleman's name now. They wanted a marshal to help out the Wiscombe Hill climb. In the top paddock. It was long before email and all the rest of it. And it was, so I telephoned and said, I'd like to do that. I used to live in Camberley. He said, oh, great, come along. We'll help out. This is the very first event I ever went to. And I went along there, my purple Ford Capri, very fashionable at the time, thank you very much, black vinyl roof. And I drove to Wiscombe Hill Climb and I was made so welcome there. And it was amazing. You had DB4s, you had DB3Ss. I was in the top paddock. Didn't own an Aston Martin, didn't know anybody. But it's people there that I met there all these years later I'm still in contact with. It's amazing. You know, it's like I went for the cars and I met some great people.
I would also say it's a great, not just as a social club, but I joined before I had a car as well. It's a great way to learn about the cars. So, because I think most of us, you know, like many people, I said I had my parents gave me my first Aston Martin when I was 9. It was a Silver Birch DB5. It was a Corgi about 3 inches long. So I was smitten with the mark. And then I joined the club and it was a terrific way to learn about the cars, what the differences were. People were very kind to let me drive their cars. And when it was time for me, you know, it was aspirational to buy an Aston Martin. I felt like I had a lot of free expert advice, which cars worked well, which cars at certain, you know, differences and which was a specific car that would be good for me. And many of our members, one of our, back to Anthony's point, one of our most enthusiastic local members for many years was a member active in all the pub nights, organizing James Bond film nights, and finally got his DB, you know, Aston Martin V8 Vantage just this year after years of being in the club. And, you know, it's perfect car, perfect for him, but he's been a stalwart, you know, long before he owned a car.
Just looking ahead to some key events in AMOC history, I think a key event in my mind was the AML centenary, the 100 years, and that was in 2013. And that was in Kensington, wasn't it, in London. A beautiful sunny day, so many Aston Martins there, and the AMOC were the driving force behind that, weren't you?
You cooperated the company very well, to be fair. And the event that they put on in the evening when we had the champagne reception and so on, and Ulrich Betzer was then the company CEO, came along. It was very well done between the club and the company. It was a good effort. But I think the club really helped to get all the cars together from all over the world of all different types.
There's a timeline of 100 cars.
100 cars, correct. That's right. I mean, that wouldn't have happened without the club doing all of its background work. And a lot of them came from all over the world. It was amazing. Yeah,
it was like an Aston Martin motor show through the ages. It was spectacular. Yeah. Bob, you were about to say something.
I was going to say, I remember going, that was certainly one of the highlights for me. And, you know, some of the special things, we were invited to the ceremony of the keys at the Tower of London by a member, which was spectacular. And as a great Anglophile and British history enthusiast, it was terrific. Over 60 members came from North America to attend the centenary, including bringing cars over, and some members left their cars here to do road tours of Europe, the UK, Ireland afterwards. So just a spectacular example of what the club can do when members get together and you know, share their enthusiasm.
Absolutely. Sharing enthusiasm, members together, we're 90 years, we've blown the candles out. So I think you've got one or two events going on this year, haven't you, Tom? Tom and Anthony and Bob?
Yeah, we've got a lot of events.
You've got a lot of events. I received a brochure, I think, a couple of months ago, and I think I remember dropping you an email, Tom, and said, my goodness, this is full. Well done to the team behind it. So
Anthony leads that. But yeah, we've got the Grafton Hotel We've got the Spring Concourse is going to be at Burleigh House, which is a magnificent place with loads of grounds around it. And there's tours as well, aren't there, Anthony, in Scotland?
We've got a 90th anniversary Highlands tour, which is starting in Yorkshire via Edinburgh, going up to the Highlands, a dinner on the Royal Yacht, all 5-star luxury on that one.
Right. We can go for some of these events individually in a moment, but when did you start planning these? When did the memo go around?
Surprisingly, perhaps only last year. Really, there's a lot of work by members of the events committee who've putting this together. The big one that we're going to be doing that's slightly different is we're calling it the International Anniversary Weekend, which we've chosen Austria. So we're going to go out there. There's going to be a tour out there, a weekend in Austria for 3 nights in a hotel that we've selected at Saalfelden. Events to do there. So there'll be a drive out at one of the passes, a city tour to Salzburg. There is a handling circuit and track there at the hotel. So that's an option for members to do that. We're actually then on the Saturday going to have a concours there, which is unusual being outside the UK from our point of view. I mean, there have been concours in the Netherlands and places, but be the first for us to do a European one. Sorry, Tom.
No, I was just going to say, I think it's been the ambition from the AMOC's management committee, if you like, over the last at least 2 or 3 years, at least, I think, since the latest management meeting, to internationalize our club more strongly. You know, we've always had members from abroad, but I think perhaps we are conscious that we need to put on events which are truly international. And there's a classic example, the one that Anthony's speaking about now, where we're anticipating people will come from Germany, Austria, France, Italy. It's all quite drivable to Austria, and it's a fantastic hotel, which is very much motoring. I think people will love it. I really do. Yeah. But this is an experiment to try and get the European side as active collectively as perhaps America is in its own way. And I think we want to really much sort of cascade this international nature, because today, people may not know, almost more than half the members now, I think, are from abroad. They're not, it's not as UK-centric as it used to be.
Yes, I remember reading that a while back. I was surprised on that. Yeah. You tend to think it's UK predominantly, but you say half are overseas?
No, half of them are abroad. And, you know, as Bob's rightly said earlier, America is still, North America is still the strongest market for Aston Martin motorcars.
Yes.
And it's booming, you know, which is absolutely great. And on that basis, we're really doing everything we can to extend our offering, if you like, and to organize for each of the geographies. So Bob represents America. We have gentleman Jim Tweddle, who represents the rest of the world, as we describe it. And then we've got Frederick Jan from the Netherlands, who looks after Europe. So we've actually got good representation, if you like, at board level to try and properly spread the activities so that they're completely relevant to current and new.
If I can just chip in there, we've actually got members coming from 15 different countries to Austria, which I think is quite something, really, as you say, Tom. That's what
okay,
the
Anthony,
was.
Name those 15 now. Go.
Right. Well, GB, the Czech Republic, Italy, Netherlands, Austria, Germany, Denmark, France, Belgium, the USA, Luxembourg, Turkey, Sweden, I think Hungary as well. Turkey, if I didn't mention them. So
That's impressive, isn't it?
It's I think that's what,
really
as Tom
healthy.
Said, that's what we're trying to do. And Tom mentioned Frederick Jan Umgrove, who has been very helpful and steered us. We were thinking Europe, didn't know exactly where. And Frederick Jan came up with Austria as an option. You're never going to suit everybody, but as Tom said, the hotel and the facilities are fantastic. Enough room to park a lot of cars for the visitors that come as well.
Mm.
Yeah, it's brilliant. And I think what will really strengthen, because you may know that we've recently signed a proper formal license with the company, which over all those 90 years, it was all a bit informal. Anyway, yes. It's a positive thing, in my opinion, in that the company now legitimise our use of the name Aston Martin and the brand. wings and all this. So I think this is very possible. And these sort of events are where we can bring value to each other. You know, the company can come and show their nice new cars off, which are pretty amazing. And the club members can come along and join in, and the integration there, as with the trust, Gary, as you know, it becomes what we like to think is the club is part of this root of the company itself, the club and the trust, and all three of us work in a cohesive and cooperative way to deliver the best value for owners and members and so on.
Yeah.
Well, as being said, it's a three-legged stool.
Bob, before I come to you, what's happening in Americas for the 90 years?
So certainly some of the things I mentioned, we are going to make special celebration at Lime Rock at the 90th celebration, at Monterey Pebble Beach Car Week.
I've never been to Lime Rock. It's worth going, isn't it?
Oh, it absolutely, it's gorgeous racetrack set in the rolling hills. It's a beautiful scene, beautiful countryside, a fabulous track with a storied history. Been a cornerstone of the club, you know, since it really began in the States in the 60s. Another really important thing I'd like to mention is we're going to have the first ever Aston Martin Heritage Trust Walter Hayes Lecture.
Yes.
In the Americas, and I believe outside the UK, which will also take place in August. Kerry Green is coordinating that. It's going to be at the Yacht Club, which is an absolutely splendid venue in the midst of, if anybody hasn't been to Monterey Car Week, it is sort of like Disneyland for British car and car enthusiasts on steroids. It's just packed every day with lots of different events, lots of great things to see. And that'll be a nice way, I think, to link the trust with the global club and to start sharing the knowledge, the wisdom, and the bonhomie that we have in the trust and the club more directly with members overseas.
Absolutely. I say about the trust, I think like the Owners Club, perceived to be a UK-based museum trust, which is probably correct because that's where the museum is, if you like. But under the new board, we are wanting to have a greater international outlook because it's the stories, the cars, the people, and hence that's why we're looking towards taking the Walter Hayes lecture to America for the first time. And if it is a success, we'll spread the love around the world. So that's the first of many.
Along those lines, I would also like to mark and credit our club historian, Nick Candy, who's been a member of our club almost since the beginning, a DB4, DB4 GT racer. He has been the cornerstone of founding it's called the North America Historical Society of the Aston Martin Owners
Club.
Yes,
I've heard about that, yeah.
So we have an affiliation, a formal affiliation. We have been collecting archives of memorabilia, magazines, our own magazines, our newsletters, the Vantage Point magazine, trophies and so forth. We have a nice relationship with what is called the Lars Anderson Museum of Transportation, which is the oldest motoring museum in the Americas and is located in Brookline, Massachusetts. The president, who happens to be a very active Aston Martin owner and member of the club. So we have archives there, which we are currently organizing and digitizing in close coordination with the Global UK Trust. Because again, I think it speaks to that it is a global club, it is a global trust, and we've had lots of events going on for decades, and we want to make sure we share all of that and make it hopefully into a database and archive that can be accessible to all our members around the world.
Perfect. Well, we're looking forward to, I know John Warden's done a lot of work on this. John Warden, the chair of the AMHT, he's been doing a lot of background work with you guys to get this over the line, and we're looking forward to carrying on with that.
Well, if you just saying on that, Gary, I think it's important that the trust and the club continue to work closely together. Personally, as far as I'm concerned, I know they're separate legal entities, but it should be one group of people working for the same aim. So I think it's good that we do work together so well.
Well, absolutely. I think all the trustees, I think, are keen to certainly work with the Owners Club. I mean, the trust is your child, you know.
After all, we did form you. Yeah,
you did form me. Hello, Dad. But but we've grown up now.
over the years, we've had different things that we've had to focus on. Some, but I think it's true to say now, which is lovely after 9 years, we are closer than ever. I think there is a genuine and real spirit of cooperation.
I think there is. I think we certainly need each other, and I think it'll be barking if the trust and the OMSC slowly over the years just separated. I think that'd just be madness, and I can't see that happening.
I'd like to note, particularly Chris Bolton, who I had dinner with when he came to Boston, as a good friend, also a trust registrar.
Lovely guy.
And Tim Cottingham, who I think everyone knows as a registrar, he is actually a member of Northeast USA as a member. So he's come to Lime Rock and brought his cars over from the UK to here, which is, I think, exactly the sort of friendship and collaboration that we want to celebrate.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Can I just go to two events, Gary?
Yes.
All the ones we've been talking about are pretty high-end events, which is fantastic.
Treasurer of the AMHT, I'm trying to find the money and excuse to go to all of these, but I'm still working on it.
Yeah.
So I find something cheaper for me.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. I think Bob mentioned it earlier. We start with local areas having pub meets. So I'm in my particular local area. We meet once a month. You can go along for a drink. Usually it's a dining pub, so you can have something to eat if you want, along with weekends away. So areas organise a lot of events. So it's not just the HQ team or America's team in Bob's case or the rest of the world.
The areas are a vital part of the club, aren't they, Tom?
The lifeblood of the club, yeah.
Yeah. I remember, again, in my youth, going to my very first area meeting. And I remember parking my car outside, might be in the Capri still, and there were some Astins outside, and I sat in the car for a while. I was terrified about going in, thinking, I don't know anybody. All I'm going to be talking about is big end cheeses and DB4s and all the rest of it. Anyway, I took a deep breath and went in. No one talked about cars, really.
A no.
Little bit. It was your excuse, but then it was just banter, chat, and a thoroughly agreeable evening. So I think if anyone hasn't been to an area meeting, you know, do take a brave pill. If you haven't been at all, take a brave pill, go in there, and I think you will be pleasantly surprised. And there's no snobbery. I think everyone is welcome, you know, so please do try that.
And in our case, of our local area, partners go.
Yeah.
So it's not just, I think there's, like you say, there is this thought that it'll be group of old men talking about sprockets and chains and oils and things, which may well have been some years ago, but now, as you say, probably cars don't always get mentioned.
Yeah.
The only other thing, Gary, which you've not mentioned is the Hotel de France for Le Mans.
Yeah.
We've got a weekend set up there. I'm not sure, actually, Anthony probably tell you better than me exactly what's going on, but we're all aware that the Valkyrie is going to, for the first time in our memory, have an attempt to outright victory at Le Mans, which would be awesome if it comes off. But of course, there's going to be a huge amount of interest from all AMOC members and owners and whatever. So it'd be lovely to be there. And
you're right, Tom. We've on the Friday, the 13th of June, we've booked the Hotel de France, which is, well, a lot of members will know, is the hotel where the team were based in 1959 when they actually won Le Mans.
Yes.
And so we're going to the same hotel, having dinner and drinks the evening. As Tom said, important Le Mans this year because Aston are entering the main class, shall we say, to try and get an outright win. We also go to the Classic Le Mans. I've done for many years and have a strong presence there. Lots of members go, park on the infield. You can do a track.
I think the Classic Le Mans and the Silverstone Festival is, as it is now known, Silverstone Classic. I think this is where the AMSC membership becomes an advantage because this allows you access that you wouldn't normally have if you weren't a member. For the Le Mans Classic, unless you're a member, because it's AMOC infield parking on the Bugatti side of things, I think it is.
Yeah.
You have to be a member, right? You book for first tickets and you get access to that. Silverstone Classic, Silverstone Festival, infield parking. It's through a club code that gives you access to this. Otherwise, you're in the general car park. As I'm saying, being a member of a car club, being a member of the AMOC, does allow you to have access to these events.
Yeah, and someone said earlier, it gives you access to places where you don't normally go, or you can't. Yeah. You couldn't just turn up in your car and say, oh, "Can I come in here?" But we fortunate enough to be able to organize events. Not like the Kensington Centenary, there was the reception there. Our Concord events, certainly the Spring Concord, we've met in some fabulous stately home country houses. There's a dinner in there, which again, you can't just go and have a dinner there.
The biggest one, and it was Sandringham, wasn't it, last year?
Correct.
It was awesome to be allowed to park all our cars, you know, very close to the house there.
So we actually were allowed to park the cars that were entering the Concours in front of Sandringham House. Yeah, that was fantastic. Things that you don't get. We're very fortunate that His Majesty the King is an avid Aston supporter, and we were lucky enough to have his car there, which is the DB6 Volante that was last seen in the Royal Wedding from William and Kate.
Absolutely. Let's go to the future. 1935, there was never an internet, no emails, no thing. It was very, you know, everyone had to come together. Now, as we all know, the internet, Facebook groups, and God knows what else, all vying for people's attention. Tom, how do you see, what's the outlook for the AMOC? I'm going to talk about the barn in a minute, but perhaps each of you, and particularly Bob, how do you see the international outlook? How do we compete with the barrage of information that is out there?
So, you know, I think what's very exciting is I think we do have a much more global outlook as a club. Social media, internet allows us connectivity. You know, it never would have occurred, 40 years ago to send a letter to Hong Kong and say, I'm going to be here these dates. Is anybody around for a meeting? So I think, there's lots of informal WhatsApp groups and Facebook groups where people are sharing information about what's going on. So that gives us a tremendous amount of flexibility and adaptability. And I think it's only a question partly of letting people know what we're doing, because, I'll give you a small example. We were down with this group. We were down in a place called Topoko for the Tail of the Dragon, which is one of the best driving roads in America. We had the 7 Aston Martins out front. A man came out, starts talking about the cars. He's the owner of the hotel. He has a DB9. He invites us, to Key Largo, to another one of his properties. Just fabulous. And I think that now he's getting very involved in Florida through our club. Not a member, but obviously somebody is a tremendous enthusiast and now is a member. And I think that's what we want to do and keep doing.
Is let people know what you're doing, basically.
Yeah.
So
show the cars. I mean, everywhere, I would say, whatever people think, these cars go through and they are an event. People want to see the cars from small town gas stations in Canada to the Miami Grand Prix. People are coming up, surrounding the cars, wanting their pictures with the cars. I think people forget, how rare these cars are and how special they are.
Yes.
Since we're fortunate enough to be around them a lot. But I bring the cars out, talk to people, give them information about how to connect. And I think we were just going to go from strength to strength.
I think, interestingly, Bob, you touched on a point there as well. I think that the internet, the modern communication is fantastic, but it's the people, back to the people.
Yep. Yes.
And you summed it up there where the guy came, he was really friendly, he was enthusiastic, and that was face-to-face. So it's dealing with people. And that is the bit that you will never get purely with the internet or anything like that.
Yeah,
yes.
No, I agree. The other thing I think to answer your question, Gary, is that we have at the highest level in the club now, it's an absolute ambition to be sure that we're relevant to owners of new motor cars. There's some sort of theories that it's all a bunch of old blokes that like messing with old Aston Martins, and that is not true. I mean, it is true that we've got some old blokes messing with old Aston Martins, but it's also true we've got loads of people who've just bought an Aston Martin and think it's brilliant to come along and all these things. So there's a real target, there's a real ambition at the highest level in the club. And I'm trying to orchestrate that, if you like, and under my reign as chairman, so that we're pushing for more members, and we're pushing for members who are absolutely buying new motor cars. And the opportunity there is huge, because we're 7,000 members. Well, they're selling 5,000 motor cars a year now. And if we only had 10% of them, that's 500 people per annum. So without being too greedy or too over the top, what we want to do is just to make the event so relevant and so enjoyable, which we've just been talking about, that the new guys want to come along and enjoy it. And I think on that basis, I think over the next few years, and I, probably 2 or 3 years, saying we could quite readily go from 7,000 members to pushing up towards 10,000. And that would be our ambition. We don't have to be massive, but I think that would be our ambition, to see the club being successful and grow at that sort of rate.
It's a matter of communicating what the AMOC and the AMHT, this is available to you. Come and join us. I think it'd be
fantastic. And this is where the rare money can't buy, but obviously it can, events come in. Because if someone's just bought a new Aston Martin, it will be good, and they to make them part of the club, that they can get into things that, wow, yeah, I'd like to be involved in that. And that's, like you say, being a member, you can do that. Like, just like the parking at Silverstone and Classic Le Mans.
Yes, yes. Let's deal with the barn. Now, the barn came into existence. We've been, 25-odd years or something like that? It's a beautiful building. For those who don't know, the trust is there, maintains its archive from there. We have a great team of people there. And also, we have the offices of the AMOC. But I think from both our point of view, certainly from the trust point of view, the barn has we've outgrown its purpose. So I think we can all agree on that, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the thing that you've got to remember is back in the 1980s when it was being thought about and the barn was bought, one of our members was an architect, John Browning, and he did a super job in making something special. It was the barn. That actually, we thought then, many of us, that the Aston Martin was coming to an end. They were going back once more. The volume of cars being built was a handful per week. And it wasn't until Ford's engagement, when they bought the company and tried to reinvigorate everything, that suddenly we're building thousands of cars and not hundreds and tens. And that has, because of the success of the club and the trust and all, it has led us to find that the barn actually isn't a sort of museum from a past age. It really wants something active and relevant to the 21st century, and we've got to revisit our plans, which of course we're doing. We've got fantastic staff there. We do a wonderful job, so we've got to be careful that wherever it is the right geography, but it also needs to be the right scale and all good things about it to make it very connectable to just be talking about the internet and modern communication. There are reasons why the barn isn't ideal, and we need to be addressing that.
And the AMHT is working with the AMOC to find new premises, but premises are not just part of it. We are looking towards what they call finding the future. It goes beyond we want to get away from a UK-based museum, as I'm sure you want to get away from a UK-based club. And we're looking towards the new premises, wherever they're going to be, are going to be very much fueling an international outlook. I feel that's the way it's going to be. It's going to be a base, but it's not going to be perceived as a UK-based trust or UK-based museum. So I think we are, it's a long process, but we've got to get it right.
Are you thinking about, when you say that, having a travelling section of the museum, if you want to call it that?
Yeah.
One of the things is working with partners, going around the UK, going around the world, going to the United States to champion Aston Martin heritage.
I think it's Mob's opportunity, the modern connectivity that, like we do now, the podcast and whatever, it can bring us more effectively together than ever before.
I was just going to say, I think what Bob was saying about the 00 trip in down the East Coast, whenever the cars are there, it draws a crowd. So if you have I'll call it a travelling museum, probably not the right way, but and you get the local club members involved, you've suddenly got an attraction there, haven't you? And that will move wherever.
Mm-hmm. Bob, do you have a view on this, on the trust of the AMOC and its international outlook, how it could be improved?
Well, I think, obviously I have an older car, and the new cars are absolutely amazing in all sorts of ways that the older car aren't. The older cars are different. But at the same time, I really think it is the heritage that distinguishes Aston Martin. I mean, at the risk of sounding, glib, there's a lot of tremendous cars out there, but there's a reason people buy Aston Martins. And I don't think it's just because they're terrific sports cars and grand tours. I think it's because it's an iconic image, an iconic brand, an iconic association with James Bond, British history, racing triumph at Le Mans and elsewhere. So I think that's always going to be central to the Aston Martin brand, that heritage is a connection, because I think, you know, again, there's lots of different cars out there, but there's a reason why people are driving these cars. And there's a reason why people are excited to see them, because, you know, there's lots of cars out there. But as I said, every time we stopped for gas, people stopped and took photos of us. People came over and wanted to talk. And I would say, you know, it's a great thing. You know, obviously, some of the association is with James Bond. You know, one of my predecessors on the member survey, he said, first question was, how much did James Bond have to do with the purchase of your first Aston Martin? And the second question was, no, really. Because, you know, for a lot of us, that's when we first saw Goldfinger or Thunderball, and that the hook was set. But, you know, I think we had a great event in Boston with Aston Martin Formula One and the British American Business Council and Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And it was a 1920s pre-war racer that I think drew more attention than all of the other cars, which included a DB4 convertible and a lot of beautiful new Vanquish and DB11s. But, you know, that's the thing people don't see. 100-year-old racing car, you know, still racing, still going at unbelievable speeds. And, you know, if you think you're brave, go 100 miles an hour in a pre-war car.
Wow.
It's a lot different.
No, quite right.
Quite right.
Point to add in, which you mentioned there, which we've obviously got a strong competition. So there's the St. John Horsfall meeting every year. And we've got a hill climb and sprint championship that goes, which is a fantastic taster method into to doing some motorsport.
And of course, that was the roots of the club, as we all know.
Absolutely, yeah.
But unfortunately, these days, the commerciality of most race tracks makes it a very expensive indulgence. So we have as a club, we've tried to address this, because we've a couple of events on now in conjunction with the Bentley Drivers Club. So we share the expenses of hiring the track, and that has been helpful to members to still be able to afford to do some of these events, certainly in the UK.
And you still do track days as well, don't you?
Yeah, we do track days as well.
Yeah.
I think the whole world's changed, because increasingly with Goodwood now in the UK, and then the things that we've spoken about with Bob in North America, there are so many events for people who are enthusiastic motorists, which are not necessarily racing. It's just a different one. And they didn't probably in the 20s and 30s, and when we were just getting going in the 30s and 40s and so on. It works, but maybe not quite what we did in the beginning, but it's great that we do keep the St. John Horsfall race, for example, going every year. And I'd say there's probably more pre-war cars now actively racing than there has been since back in the day, because they've become more valuable. They're also of greater interest. There's a lot of people who have never seen cars of that age. And the events in North America and Goodwood, for example, give a great showroom. People who can afford those cars and want to show them off, that's the perfect way to do it, you know, and then everybody wins, you know.
I think you're right, Tom, that the pre-wars have come to the fore this last, I don't know, 5-10 years with the racing. I mean, going back 20, 30 years, it was the Newport Pagnol DB4-5-6s that were racing. But because of the values of the car, they were converted back from being a race car into road cars, right, which took a lot of them out of the racing scene.
That's right.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Because these events exist, companies like Acuri Battelli for the pre-war cars and other independent Aston Martin, they can make a specialization out of preparing these cars beautifully for their owners, you know. So that's really something that didn't exist before. Yeah.
So I'm going to allow you to do a sales pitch. This podcast, we have about 25% listeners in the United States and about 10-15% in Germany, and it's spreading around. Why should someone join the AMOC, whether in the UK or the overseas? Why should someone join the Aston Martin Owners Club, and how do they do it?
Well, it's always very easy to do, because you can go online now and just follow the instructions and become a member. But the reason why you do it is because for a very modest fee, in my humble opinion, about the price of what you fill the petrol tank with these days, you get all this connectivity to our publications, which are monthly, in the UK, but they contain information about all activities going on globally. And there's also the Aston Martin Quarterly, which is a glossy photo.
That is a beautiful publication, a quarterly, isn't it?
Absolutely, which I think everyone would enjoy it. If you're interested in cars in general, but Aston Martins in particular, you're going to enjoy that. And then, as it's been said earlier, it's at your own local level, be you abroad or the UK, wherever, the regular meetings that happen just between local members on their own patch are a great way to socialise, and all of that for the price of a full tank of gas. So.
Yeah, and absolutely. And that membership allows you to be a supporter of the Aston Martin Heritage Trust, free access to the museum and discount on various other trust benefits services we provide. And you get a wonderful annual publication as well, documenting the heritage of Aston Martin. So I think for a tank of fuel, you're getting a lot more money for your bucks, if I may go American there.
Yeah, I would just, echo it yet again. I think that, what I would say is, well, it starts with the cars, the community of people, the friendships for myself and my family. It's been central. And, I would never have been standing at the southernmost part of the United States, having lived here my whole life, without members from the club saying, why don't we do this thing, drive from Canada to Florida? And one of the things that I would also say is I would encourage people to join, even if they don't have a car, as you said, to take the brave pill, sit in. I would encourage, if you do have a car, talk to people, let them sit in your car. If you can get them, take them for a drive, that's a transformative experience. And I also want to emphasize, it is open to people. I think it can be kind of intimidating with the idea of Aston Martins, but I've always found people to be friendly and welcoming. And I think that's another piece that is important is, there are, I've certainly done a fair bit of talking about rod bearings and camshafts in the day, but I love the fact that, my wife and daughter have been active in events their whole, the whole time, and some of our best friends, and we visit people in places and we spend wonderful days and we don't talk about cars at all. So yeah. I think it's just a great way to connect with people who I find to be uniformly interesting and welcoming.
Now, I've got a stronger connector issue as well, because my daughter met her now husband actually at the centenary event in Kensington. So we did know the family, but yeah, they met, and so we had an Aston wedding.
I met my partner at the at an AMOC event, so. Yeah, there you go. Right. No, I love her dearly. So, gentlemen, if I may, I'd like to wrap this up and go back to the beginning, the purpose of the AMOC, and it is to promote the sport and the pastime of motoring, develop interest in the Aston Martin car, and encourage social interaction between members. And I believe over the past 90 years, the AMOC have been doing it, not resting on your laurels. You're doing it this year, and you've got great plans for the future. And I look forward to, Anthony, well, you've got about 10 years to get the centenary together, and it won't be a cut and paste. I think people will notice.
Thank you.
Gentlemen, thank you very much for your time. Bob, Tom, Anthony, thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
Thanks, Gary. Bye-bye.
Here we are.
You're listening to the Aston Martin Heritage Podcast. Discover more about the story of Aston Martin, the cars, the people, the history, with the Aston Martin Heritage Trust. You're always welcome to visit us at our museum in Oxfordshire. So find out more via amht.org.uk.